Jeez. Oh, I do not. Oh, I don't feel so good. Oh, why did you give my job to the German guy again? Welcome back to Motorsport 101.
To put up with the insufferable intro and the insufferable man from baseball series. Hey guys, Dre here. Welcome back to episode 272 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighbor host, Dre Harrison. And in this edition of the show, we are going to be talking all about... there's a line in my script here through Germany. It says it's the Eiffel Grand Prix, apparently, because we can't call it Germany. Thanks, Hockenheim. With me, as per always, smug as a motherfucker. Oh, sorry, King, bleep machine. RJ O'Connell, you insufferable bastard.
Hey,
that's another bleep.
If you're ever baking, if you're ever making sauces, or just if you're just cooking in general, it's a good idea to just mix things up a little bit. You gotta mix it up.
Look, I'm enjoying the one win we have so far this series.
I know.
One. It's a very important one. Meanwhile,
I am of the mind that I don't want to see guys like Clayton Kershaw retire without a ring, and this generation of Los Angeles Dodgers is too good to go down as the best team never to win a championship. Just not at my team's expense, please!
Yes, at your team's expense, for freak's sake. It's not my fault you guys are fun, really good, and likable. It's really annoying. Like, ugh. Anyway, Ryan King, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm glad that, LA Dons are finally, repeating what normally happens, because never forget what happened to Brooklyn. Never forget.
Of course.
But yeah, I'm glad that LA Dons is going through their struggles right now.
So when are you buying one of these new Brooklyn Nets tie-dye jerseys?
Never.
I don't know. I think we should ask him about the Dutch national team coaching job.
Clearly. I'm looking for that New York Knicks coaching job. I feel like I'm...
No, you're not.
What? No.
Nobody wants these problems.
What? Oh, it's an own thing. What can I say? Cam, how you doing down there, sir?
I'm doing great from the dark corner of my room because it's dark outside and my light really isn't well laid out for podcast lighting, but that's okay.
Invest in a ring light. It saves you wonders. Look at my glowing face. It's great.
Or all of you thinking that I have the money to invest.
Or you could do what
I'll buy you one.
Or you could do what I do and just turn the screen brightness all the way up.
Wow, that's a fucking hack.
That is quite the life hack.
Do you have a fucking floodlight as your backlight for your computer? Jesus Christ.
Pretty much.
Good Lord.
Let me try this here.
No. What?
This is on low. Let me turn the brightness all the way up.
What is happening on this podcast intro this week? Am I invisible in this pink shirt? So while my colleagues here all of a sudden turn their contrast settings to 105 out of 100, I'll get into the main point of the show, which is this week is talking about the Eiffel Grand Prix and the, shall we say, newsworthy events that came through it, because there was a lot to get through there. Also, we'll be talking a little bit of news off the track, rumours about 2021, a possible new Brazilian Grand Prix, which, well, everybody disliked that, except Bolsonaro, apparently, and some IndyCar silly season craziness as well, because there's been a big reshuffle down at the Arrow McLaren team that's certainly worth talking about as well. But in the meantime, basically you can find this real quick while I try and find my sanity. YouTube.com/Motorsport101. If you're watching this on there, hi. Why not subscribe, hit the bell, all that good stuff. We're on Facebook.com/Motorsport101. We're on Twitter. Our handles are on the screen. Our podcast Twitter is @Motorsport_101. If you're listening to us on audio, it's @Harrison101HD, @RJ O'Connell, @RyanEricKing, and @CBuckley917. 7. We're on Instagram now as well, at Motorsport101Pod. You can find us on there. Look for the giant purple logo. And we're on Patreon. If you like to back us financially over there, you can. Patreon.com/Motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all the audio versions of our show, upgrade to $10 for the video version, as well as getting the supporters club of our Discord server where you can listen to these shows live as they're being recorded. You can find all the details and so much more on that on our website, motorsport101.com. So, without further ado, let's get in to the Eiffel GP.
Oh boy, we get to have another GOAT debate. I'm sure we haven't had enough of these between basketball and Formula One social media.
No, we haven't had those this week. It's lost us a lifetime, clearly.
Two GOAT debates got spicier on the same day.
You know what we don't miss about F1? FP1 and 2 being washed out by a bad case of rain and fog, ruining the F1 debut appearances of Mick Schumacher and Callum Ilott. Sorry, boys, your practice session is in another Grand Prix. Oh. One of the biggest stories of the weekend happened before we even started FP3, as Lance Stroll had gotten ill overnight. Thankfully, not COVID-related, probably. Still, fresh out of the pastry shop and into the fire, Nico Hülkenberg was back and just in time for qualifying. He'd start from the back after just 4 push laps on Saturday afternoon. Bottas would end up on pole, with Hamilton and Verstappen close behind, and Charles Leclerc 4th for Ferrari. So, race goes green, and Hamilton gets the better launch and tries the old Rosberg trick of running your man clean off the road. Only this time, Bottas held firm, took the apex for 2, and held the early lead. Meanwhile, Daniel Ricciardo got around the outside of Charles Leclerc and into 3rd. Fast forward to lap 13, and Valtteri Bottas suffers a horrendous lock-up into turn 1, leading to Lewis Hamilton taking the lead round the outside of 2, as Bottas suddenly had a 20 pence piece for a front right tyre. Further back, George Russell suffered broken suspension after Kimi Raikkonen clattered into the side of his Williams in a three-way fight between them and Sebastian Vettel. Raikkonen would be hit with a 10-second time penalty for causing a collision. More disaster 4 laps later as Daniil Kvyat overshot the final chicane trying to defend from Alex Albon, but then the tyre closed the door too quickly into the final corner, taking the Russian's front wing off the car. 5-second time penalty for Alex. He would later retire as part of the debris ended up in his radiator. Next up, the power unit struggle subsection. Lap 19 had Valtteri Bottas' battery die on him, leading to a forced retirement. Lando Norris, too, was struggling with his power unit with no deployment on his MGUK. He'd eventually park it on lap 44 due to overheating. Lando took a deck chair for his Fernando Alonso meme moment. This brought out a late safety car and forced most of the field onto the soft running tyres they didn't run on Friday. Except for Grosjean, hipster. The race became an 11-lap sprint after Max Verstappen spent 5 minutes moaning on the radio about how cold his tyres were, and Hamilton took off with another monster restart and didn't really look back. Ricciardo tried a big lunge for second, but couldn't get there. Perez countered with an attack on the Honey Badger for 3rd, but couldn't pass him either. And that was the end of the major action. Lewis Hamilton coming over the line for his record-tying 91st career Grand Prix victory with the great Michael Schumacher. Verstappen took another gutsy second with the fastest lap of the race on the final lap, and Daniel Ricciardo finished 3rd, scoring Renault's first podium finish since Nick Heidfeld at Malaysia 2011. A deserved honourable mention too for the Hulkster for a sensational 8th place finish from the back of the field on just 30 hours' notice. One of the drives of his career.
As it pertains to the championship standings, we're done here, folks. Lewis Hamilton leads with 230 points to Valtteri Bottas' 161. He leads Max Verstappen by 12 points on 149 points. Then the battle for 4th place. Daniel Ricciardo jumps up to 4th with 78 points. Sergio Perez is 5th on 68 points. Lando Norris has 65. Albon has 64. Leclerc has 63. The aforementioned and absent Lance Stroll has 57, and Pierre Gasly, still 10th, on 53 points. In the Constructors' Championship, Mercedes-Benz lead 391 points to Red Bull's 211. Racing Point are on 120, McLaren on 116. Renault have 114. This battle for 3rd is really getting intense. Ferrari have 80 points, AlphaTauri 67, Alfa Romeo 5, Haas 3, and Williams still at 0. But moment of the race, Lewis Hamilton ties the record. He reaches the unreachable star. And what a great moment it was to have Mick Schumacher present Lewis with one of Michael's old helmets after the race. That just brings a damn tear to your eye. I don't care who you are.
I'm actually quite jealous of Lewis Hamilton's helmet collection, because like the Senna family gave him one of his when he broke the pole record at Canada a few years ago, and now he's got one of Michael's now too. Jammy git. But in all seriousness, it was a very wholesome moment. It was I'm glad they got Mick in for something after his free practice session got rained off. Mick, while you're here for the weekend, you know, you mind getting the present out? There you go. It was great. Great image, you know, powerful moment, all sorts of awesome. And look, I've made this joke earlier on the week about, you know, I used the how it started and how it's going meme to describe it, where it was I said on our old Race World TV video that Schumacher's 91 wins would never be beaten, and I called it the most unbreakable F1 record of all time, and didn't think that would happen, but hey, that's what 7 years of winning 10 a year does to you, I suppose.
Yeah, it's very special moment. I liken it to remember when Cal Ripken Jr. Broke Lou Gehrig's record of consecutive games played. It felt like that. It felt like a record that would never be touched, and yet here he is. He's tied the record, and within the next handful of rounds can easily beat it. Hell, he could beat it next week for all we know.
Yeah. And the only real shame for me is, of course, Michael isn't in a state where he could have presented the helmet himself.
Oh, goodness, yeah.
Indeed.
And of course, we're always thinking about him.
Absolutely.
But yeah, the one of the, as Michael very famously said, records are there to be broken. And this one is tied.
Michael and Lewis have a lot of things in common. For Formula One drivers especially, they came from comparatively working class backgrounds. Both of them have taken a lot of their time and their wealth and their influence to better society for good. They have not always been the most likable of champions, depending on who you ask. But they are still, in my opinion, the two greatest drivers of the modern era. And nothing will take that away from them.
Yeah, and I think it's also a point that will become more poignant later on in the episode. Both drivers are products of driver academies.
Mm-hmm.
They are indeed. They are indeed. One for Mercedes and one for McLaren. Hey, who said these driving academies don't work out every once in a while, right?
even when they start over in sports cars.
I know! The transition, it's great. He doesn't love it. And yeah, of course, keep fighting, Michael. We miss you, brother. And it's still not quite the same without you down there. But see, I remember as far back as 2000, and I think it was 2012, he was saying the records were meant to be broken. I think, and he's always been one of those dudes that's completely embraced, like, not like the modern generation of guys like Hamilton and Vettel, and, you know, easily, you know, the two other big hitters of this era. Sorry, Fernando.
Well, I mean, I think he knew in a way, not specifically who it was going to be, but it was inevitable. You know, F1 being a sport of dominance, if you win, you're going to win a lot. And even during Michael's time in the sport, the calendar just kept getting longer and longer. Like, it was a matter of time that someone was going to break the record. I didn't think it was going to be this soon, but it was a matter of time.
Yeah, a record like this, especially in a sport like Formula One, when a team goes on a run like this with as many races added to the calendar, it was a matter of time. Just like the record amount of championships. Eventually, if someone goes on a long enough run, those records will fall.
Absolutely. And indeed. I don't want to take too much away from what Michael accomplished in his time either, because let's not forget, he took the all-time wins record back in 2001 and nearly doubled it by the time his first career at Ferrari ended, while he was just starting his run of 5 in a row at Ferrari.
Yeah.
I mean, that is impressive to add another 40% to the all-time wins record. Yeah, even more so that Lewis Hamilton is just tied it.
Kind of what, like, you know, what Babe Ruth did in baseball. How, you know, that famous idiom that Ruth was an Everest in Kansas. Like, Schumacher might not have the record anymore, but his impact on the record is immeasurable.
Yeah, rewrote every measure. He rewrote every record in the book, and not just by a small margin, but by an order of magnitude.
Yeah, I will always
ironically doing a lot of that damage, arguably after his prime, because of the run at Ferrari.
Yeah, I will say that I was very fortunate to have watched Michael Schumacher race. Although I wasn't his biggest fan at the time, I have a greater appreciation for what he has done now, and I have a great deal of appreciation for what Lewis Hamilton means to this sport, motorsport in general. I am very proud to say that, and I'm sure all of us are, that we got to watch the absolute best of Lewis Hamilton in our times. And I hope that we can tell these stories for our children, grandchildren, nephews, nieces, whoever may come, for generations to come.
Yeah.
Also, damn, Nico Hülkenberg from 20th on the grid to finish 8th.
Hulking back.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Hybrid Boogaloo, everybody.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
I'm sipping a coffee.
Hülkenberg was having a coffee, where he gets a phone call saying Lance Stroll's fallen ill overnight. How fast can you get to the ring? And a couple of hours late,
he was about 3 hours away, and Otmar Szafnauer calls his phone. Hey, you up?
It's like, oh man, I was having a coffee in Cologne, but guess I'm free.
I wonder if his buddy was just like, hey, where did Nico go? He pops on the television and is like, that sly motherfucker got out of going to get a coffee. He's going to drive a car around. This is really impressive, and it's made this whole Red Bull deal, because this was not one of Alexander Albon's finer drives, and now we're starting up the rumors that Hülkenberg's going to be plugged into that Red Bull seat. After Helmut Marko said, look, Albon's the only guy that can match Verstappen's pace when he's on.
Yeah.
The problem is that he's not been on enough.
When's he done that?
Well, and this weekend, Red Bull brought a lot of updates, a very different car. And it was so different that Albon, I think for the first time this year, was actually put on the same spec of car as Verstappen with a brand new tub.
Yep. It was a complete restep.
Yeah, complete reset for both cars, and gotten quite a bit closer to Mercedes. But on paper, this should have been Albon's best weekend of the year. Instead, it might have been his worst.
Yeah, I'll say it was arguably Albon's worst weekend of the year. He was slow in qualifying. His racecraft was very sloppy. He didn't have a particularly large amount of pace, and to top it all off, He takes out his sister car's front wing completely needlessly.
Like, it was fortunately good for Albon that he took some gravel to his radiator, so he was forced to retire.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it was
that was a mercy
killing. Previously to this weekend, I've been very willing to give Albon the benefit of the doubt. We know how Red Bull is. If they could enter one car, they would. But this was brutal for him.
Yeah, I said it on Twitter during the race. I literally tweeted something along the lines of, Albon is getting harder to defend even before that DNF. And this is going to sound a bit harsh, but bear with me here. This sounded, or looked to me, for the first time, as if Albon looked out of his depth. in that car.
And the thing is, like, the thing is with, like, a lot of Formula One drivers, we always have... We don't have that what if they made a different career decision. We have that for Albon. Yeah. He gave up a seat in Formula E for this, where it's like, hey,
a factory seat.
Oliver Rowland won a race in that car in what could have been Alex Albon's seat.
Yeah, yeah. And Rowland was what, top three in the championship this year in Formula E? So you know, he walked away from a really good factory Formula E series that will become a world championship next year. So this is not looking good. And you know, it's like, honestly, I looked at it as a bad situation when Helmut Marko openly said on the record he's considering breaking Red Bull's long-time policy of basically academy and umbrella drivers only.
Yeah.
To bring in Nico Hülkenberg?
Yeah.
The guy that we don't...
They haven't done this since before they were actually good. They haven't done this since they had a lineup of Weber and Coulthard, who were very much not Red Bull Academy prospects.
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
The last time they did this, they didn't really have an academy.
No.
Right. So,
yeah. It's either Hülkenberg or it's Sergio Perez, as I've seen.
It was a, the last time they did this, it was a Blue Jaguar.
Yeah.
Consider that. So, and, I mean, last year... Gasly got the false vote of confidence. Albon isn't even getting that.
Yeah,
that's.
But the thing
scary.
Is, he was until about a week ago.
Yeah, and this weekend seems to whatever stock he had at Red Bull seems to have gone out the window. And it's a shame because we know that Albon is better than what he showed last weekend.
Absolutely,
but this is bad.
He is a great guy. He is a very nice character, refreshing breath of fresh air in the Formula
One.
He's a
very likable driver.
He really is.
No one can take that from him, but to an extent, you have to make your own luck right now, and he really didn't do himself any favors.
And it's going to be even harder now that Yuki Tsunoda is firmly entrenched in that picture. He is getting his first test in Imola.
Yeah.
It might be a whole lot harder if Red Bull leaves the whole sport.
They're not leaving.
We'll buy that later.
Like, honestly, we didn't even put the latest Red Bull quit story in the set list because we thought, nah.
Well, this is an interesting one because I'll quickly go over it. TLDR, yeah. Red Bull, their first option right now is to purchase Honda's IP at the end of 2021 so they can run and maintain the Honda-designed engines. Now, this isn't really viable if you want to stay competitive. Hi, Williams in 1997.
No!
Unless there is an engine freeze. And right now...
That's what Red Bull are lobbying for.
Red Bull are lobbying for it. In fact, three of the engine manufacturers are theoretically on board.
Yeah, and there's...
Guess who isn't?
Oh, man. But, like, to have an engine freeze at this point when...
Well, that's what's already on the table right now is an engine update at the end of this year, an engine update at the end of 2021, and then that's it.
Then a freeze for 4 years.
Yeah.
A four-year engine freeze.
It reminds me of last year's V8 era.
It has its own problems, as 2014 very openly proved. But, You can guess which engine manufacturer isn't doing too good right now and doesn't want an engine freeze.
Ferrari.
Could it be the Prancing Horse by any chance?
I think the Prancing Donkey would be more accurate.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. I just find it amazing that we're talking about the pinnacle of motorsport and engineering in racing, talking about a 4-year engine freeze. Like, I just find that amazing.
How does that the engine freeze in the V8 era?
Harsh on donkeys, though.
It was the engine freeze was 2009 to 2013.
Yeah, that was the last time we had it.
But the thing
they let Renault develop.
Yeah, they let Renault develop, and like they introduced KERS, which was not subject to the freeze. If they were to freeze the entire power unit for 4 years, this is a whole different ballgame.
Yes, it is. Yeah. And it feels like Renault and Red Bull are okay with becoming a partnership again, but none of them wants to make the, neither of them want to make the first move.
Because,
well, to be fair, I don't think Cyril wanted that tattoo.
Oh God, the tattoo's happening, people.
Finally.
For those guys that, for those guys that don't know the story, Cyril Abitbol had a bet with Daniel Ricciardo that if Ricciardo managed to get on the podium this season, Cyril would have to get a tattoo of Ricciardo's choice somewhere on his person. Well, guess who just had the team's first podium in nearly a decade?
Or 5 years, depending on what your definition of a team is. Congratulations, Renault. You're now finally where you should have been in 2018. On the podium. You
2019.
Did it.
Let's give him that.
Let's be nice. I bet my life on it.
Yeah. King bet potassium poisoning.
Oh, shit. That's what I forgot to get the bananas at the grocery store.
King, next year that blueberry pie to the face is inching ever closer.
I know. They might get a win.
Wow.
Yeah, Renault, fair play. The last few races, they've made big strides. And yeah. Danny Ric did the work.
This is no longer a surprise. Renault in the top five is now happening frequently. Like in the battle of the midfielders or just like the guys just below the
Danny
big three.
Danny Ric in the top five, because Esteban Ocon's been having a time.
Yeah, he's been middle of the road. But you look at the situation right now, it's like, as RJ alluded to when he read the constructors' standings down, it's now fiercely between McLaren, Racing Point, and Renault for third in the constructors' championship, which is
three
big
teams,
money.
6 points. Racing Point, yeah. McLaren, and Renault. And now everybody's starting to talk about, did Daniel Ricciardo have buyer's remorse when he got himself out that Red Bull deal? Well, excuse me, that Renault deal.
Which, honestly, with the way Renault's projecting right now, I almost would agree.
But you gotta
remember, got their shit together. Yeah. But when he made the decision, Renault stunk.
But you also gotta remember, 2021, the return of McLaren Mercedes.
Yeah.
Right.
Even so, McLaren got one good car out of this new infrastructure, because this year's car is all over the damn place.
Yeah.
Carlos Sainz described his race as 60 laps of suffering.
And he still finished fifth. Where would Lando Norris have been if his power unit didn't crap out and he didn't have
probably
to have his own death chair meme? Yeah.
Potentially third.
He was right in the thick of it between Checo and Ricciardo for a possible podium finish after Bottas' retirement. And before it becomes a meme, Lando was running top five, you know, and Sainz had a miserable race and still finished in fifth. Yeah. I still don't know how good McLaren actually is. It's really frustrating, given that we're like two-thirds of the way through the year. But here we are, you know, Lando becomes a meme, he's streaming as we speak, and shout out to both their drivers for racing special helmets this weekend in tribute to Mind, the mental health charity. That was a great touch. You may remember I did a campaign with a certain book to raise money for their charity as well. A lot of people have done like running efforts as well, so if you can support Mind, it's a great charity, please do. So shout out to McLaren for that. That was awesome in general. But yeah, we have a heated fight in the what I like to now nickname the battle for the bronze between Racing Point, Renault,
how does
and
it
McLaren.
Feel to be the bronze medal?
How about this fight for fourth in the driver's standings? Ricciardo, Sergio Perez had another great race and another example of how that's going to be a tough loss if indeed this is his last year in Formula One. Norris is still in it. For all that shit we've been talking about Alex Albon about 5 minutes ago, he's still in this. Leclerc's
he's
still
in a fucking Red Bull, RJ.
Yeah,
Red Bull.
Look where his teammate's at.
His teammate has 2.5 times his point total.
Yeah, like this is, we joke about other drivers losing to their teammate. Jesus Christ.
I'm reading off the names that are on the top 10 of the list.
RJ, I'm okay. A Sebastian Vettel fan, and I feel bad for Alex Albon right now. Jesus.
Oh,
like, Alex Albon should be comfortably on at least 80 points.
Yeah.
How does he only have 64? How is he behind Lando? Like, How is he only, like, 7 ahead of Lance Stroll, who missed the Grand Prix? Like, Jesus!
And if we look at last year with Gasly, and how he was doing relative to Max, he was closer to Max than this.
Yeah. Gasly's only 11 points behind him. This point is not good.
To be fair, Gasly did win a race this year. Yeah. That did happen.
Yeah, that's
sliding that inflated counts.
That accounts for most of his points. It's going to be a close battle for fourth in the Drivers' Championship. It's going to be a close battle for third in the Constructors, assuming nothing weird happens with the next handful of races. By the way, Romain Grosjean finally getting on the board.
Back in the points.
Finally, with what may or may not have been a broken finger.
Yeah.
Apparently, it was just a bruise. Like, all reports say he was fine after the race.
I was going to say, it couldn't have been that bad if he was seen in the pub after the Grand Prix carrying 2 points for the 2 points he scored by finishing in ninth place.
He did go well here last time we were here back in 2013. Grabbed a podium for Lotus.
Yeah, he did. That was a great dogfight. Him, Kimi Raikkonen, and Sebastian Vettel, who were pretty much glued wheel to wheel for 60 laps. That was a tense race, certainly. But yes, went on to Grosjean there in ninth. Great job in the Haas car there. And yeah, I actually kind of feel a bit bad for Haas, because it's like the one time they scored points, which they badly needed in their own fight for eighth. Who was 10th? Antonio Giovinazzi scoring for only the second time this season. Gio had a point in 10th. Great drive from Antonio Giovinazzi. Yeah.
It's a shame, because you kind of get the feeling like they're finally starting to get it together, and it's just not going to matter, because it seems like they're already getting 1 foot pushed out the door.
Yeah.
Yeah,
for Giovinazzi, it's an easy pick. It looks like it's going to be Mick Schumacher for 2021. For Haas, it could be anybody from Schwartzman to Mazepin to fucking, I don't know.
Cole Custer.
No, absolutely not.
Not Cole Custer.
Fine, Kevin Harvick.
Yeah, the joke, the line that got people talking about this on the Thursday going into the weekend was... the fact that Gunther Steiner has a semi-regular column he posts at The Redacted, and he openly admitted that he has a short list of 10 drivers for the two Haas seats in 2021, and that the guy that was meant to be driving in FP1 that weekend, Callum Ilott, currently runner-up in the Formula 2 championship standings at the moment, was not on that short list, but said, hey, he might be, depending on how FP1 goes. He said, quote, definitely won't be if he bins the car.
the internet
exploded.
The internet exploded with so many takes. How dare he not have Callum Ilott on his short list?
to which my point was on Twitter at the time was, if there's a 10-person short list, including your two current drivers, how high up the bar do you think Callum Ilott is meant to be here? And if you're not in the top 3 or 4, does it really matter if you're not on a list of 10? You're not getting the seat anyway. like I've said it before, Grosjean, Magnussen, Hülkenberg, Perez.
Yeah.
Can anybody come up with an argument to put Ilott over any of those four dudes?
And the big rumor is that there's a chance that one or maybe two of the seats might be filled by one or two Russian drivers.
Right, because Schwartzman and Mazepin, who, by the way, shoved his fucking foot in his mouth on social media during George Russell's Jesus Instagram stories. That was bad, but...
What a bonehead. God.
Yeah, but Schwartzman and Mazepin... and I guess an all-Russian Haas team. I mean, that wouldn't be the worst thing, but yeah, you have experienced hands available, including two are in your own team, and it's not necessarily their fault that this team is bad.
I myself, judging by his past comments, I think Grosjean's out of there of his own accord at the end of this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he wants sports cars.
Yeah, I think he wants... Somewhere where he isn't in... not quite scoring points purgatory all year. And
Formula E would be a good fit. Formula E would be a great fit.
I would love to see Grosjean and Effie. Hold your crashing jokes. Pipe down in the peanut gallery. But, yeah, I wouldn't pick Ilott over... I mean, Hülkenberg is showing off this year and is two races because the first race he didn't get to take part.
Where was this Hulkenberg last year?
Right?
He was doing pretty good other than getting told to give the place to Daniel Ricciardo every two races. Funny how that works.
Ricciardo was looking a bit mediocre. Look, Hulkenberg's stock has not been this high since 2013. Like, and that I still can't get over how popular the man has become on Twitter just for filling in. Like, he has become like the new Charles. It's like he's the new Charles Leclerc just for showing up and doing his job. It's like, oh my god, Hulkenberg's back! Whoa! And I'm like,
yeah, I'll say it before I say it again. Can't miss somebody till they're gone, and Hulkenberg was gone.
I don't think he ever should have been dropped.
No, I don't think so either. I always said it was a harsh sacking, but even so, you guys didn't give a shit about Hulkenberg last year. Like, come on. But I do find it funny that's how it's turned out, and now he's become like one of F1's biggest memes for the year of Hulkenberg running back through the paddock when he finds out his COVID test is negative.
Fun fact as well, his helmet was at home, so he had to grab a spare Renault helmet from last year.
Yeah, you have to grab the old black and yellow Hulk helmet. I was like, that's hilarious. It's like, oh, dear.
This man is a bag of lemon and strawberry Starbursts.
Very good.
Perez, it's pretty self-explanatory. Perez has been great.
He's number one on the board. How is he not number one on the board? He's still only 29. Yeah. He's got nearly 200 Grand Prix under his belt, and he's been the best midfielder in the sport for half a decade.
Kind of have to talk about the big elephant in the room. Sergio Perez is the biggest backer. Telmex, owned by one of the richest people in the world, Carlos Slim, has a billionaire feud with one Gene Haas over the sacking.
Why are we? The hate sets is going to be wonderful.
Over the sacking of not one, but two other drivers.
Why
are you pissing on this bonfire, huh? Having a good time.
In summary, Magnussen, Hulkenberg, Haas 2021, all aboard the... Well, we can't really call it hype train now, can we?
Yeah, if I had to say, I'd probably... My gut says Hulkenberg, Schwartzman next year at Haas.
Do you think they drop Mags?
Yes.
Honestly, something just came to mind. I keep thinking about a certain post-race media pen quip. If we were to get Magnussen and Hulkenberg together on the same team, I would love to have like a 5-minute spiel about that.
Are we digging up the Suck My Balls Honey t-shirts out of retirement? Like
Dyson Vacuum?
Fan clicks drew up.
Dyson Vacuum, Spalding Balls. Ooh. End of discussion.
Yeah, pretty much. Before we move on, a couple of minor points I want to address. Are we done here, championship wise? Because that was the peak.
We're out of here. We're done.
Yeah, we're done.
Stamp it and get on the plane.
Yep. Au revoir, Valtteri. It was fun in 2020.
Was it fun? I don't think it was very fun.
Can I just say, I miss the Nürburgring Grand Prix Strecke as an F1 venue.
Yeah.
Get more money, Nürburgring. We need this back. It's a great track.
Yep.
Open an OnlyFans account. Do something. Honestly, because,
Won't they even post?
I showed you my carousel. Please respond.
Boy, I know a way that we can monetize all... We can monetize all these YouTube corner racks. Could you imagine, though, people paying for the privilege to just ass end their car into the gravel at YouTube corner? I think this is sustainable.
I'm sorry. I'm gone. I'm just...
That's the second time in 2 months that I've just killed Drake.
I put the hoe in Dottinger Hoa.
Oh, no, stop!
Very good.
You can flute my plats any day.
Oh my god!
Somewhere supporter of M101 Sasha is sharpening 1,000 axes.
I'm tapping out!
Let's move on to more serious concept.
Yeah, because...
Where? On this show?
This is something that we promised to talk about last week, because it was revealed a couple weeks ago, and it's been in plans for since 2019 that Brazil's far-right president, Jair Bolsonaro, wants the Brazilian Grand Prix to move, and he wants it to move to his hometown of Rio de Janeiro on a brand new purpose-built track in the Deodoro region. This is a disused military base. He wants it to have 130,000 spectators compared to 60,000 at Autodromo José Carlos Pache, a.k.a. Interlagos Circuit in São Paulo. Apparently a deal was done, there are renderings of the track released, and oh, by the way, this is going to fell about 70,000 trees in the Brazilian rainforest, which is, if you know anything about Jair Bolsonaro, he is big on, you know, expanding industry at the expense of, you know, the endangered rainforest. On top of that are many unpopular decisions.
So I think we need to break a lot of things down here. Number one, it is technically a rainforest, but it's not the, like, Amazon rainforest. It is in the middle of a city. Two, reason why it's a rainforest is because, again, it's a disused military base.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like that from, like, the satellite footage, but it used to be a testing range, and there's a lot of unexploded munitions on that site.
So this can be like the race against Deathborn in F-Zero GX, where you're avoiding bombs.
Oh, yeah.
F-Zero GX deserved better in the time extend tournament, god damn it. Damn you, Need for Speed fanboys.
Though all things considered, hey, maybe it shouldn't be converted from a military base into a racetrack. Maybe it'd be a nice park, you know?
Absolutely.
Of all the racetracks on this planet, why are we trying to replace Interlagos?
Seriously. Because... I know there are a lot of people of privilege, including people in automobile racing, that were all big on Jair Bolsonaro because he's the guy who's going to clear out all the corruption. And I'm thinking, if taking the Formula One Grand Prix away from Interlagos isn't what gets them to open their eyes and realize that this guy might be full of shit, I don't know what will.
Because the thing is that it's important to note that Rio is his hometown, and it would cost a lot of government funds would be needed to spend to clear out the unexploded munitions, build this new track from scratch, and, you know, you'd assume that a certain somebody from their own hometown has a lot of business connections, maybe know some contractors who'd like some government work.
Small government.
Yeah.
Yeah, big small government guy.
Gotta love, this is corrupt. To me,
corrupt it like it's Metroid Prime 3.
To me, it's less about deforestation. It's more about, hey, time for some high-level graft.
Yeah, let's throw some money at this and see what happens, basically. Yeah, like, you know, it sounds more like a vanity project from Bolsonaro.
It absolutely is. It's big boy daddy Bolsonaro wants a home track in his own backyard.
I think Bolsonaro should simply shut his cock holster.
Yeah, and like obviously, like a lot of Brazilians who are local to Rio and are like involved in racing want this to happen because their prior racetrack in Rio is no longer there.
Well, of course, there's always going to be a level of that. You always want a racetrack in your hometown. It's cool.
Yeah,
but. To replace Interlagos, one of the most beloved tracks on this planet, and, you know, have to clear out a bunch of unexploded munitions.
Yeah, felling 70,000 trees is not a good look. Lewis Hamilton has already said, you know, my personal opinion is that the world doesn't need a new circuit. I think there's plenty of circuits in the world that are great. I love Interlagos. I've been to Rio, and it's a beautiful, beautiful place. But it's not something that he personally supports, and I don't think anybody with any sense in this fandom actually does. Look, Rio had a wonderful track that they tore down to put up Olympic venues that have since gone to become white elephants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fucking wasteful. And from the renderings, at least, I don't know what, nothing looks inspiring. Like, yeah, you're going to have twice the capacity. You say you're going to have less crime than you do at Sao Paulo.
But
I don't know for sure. Yeah, you can have all these concerts and other events here, but yeah, is it worth it?
Like,
I think you put it really well, RJ. It's wasteful.
Yeah,
that's
like
the word.
The track itself looks like Moscow Raceway South. It looks so
generic as fuck.
Yeah,
it looks like insert generic Tilkadrome here. We have Bahrain at home. The Bahrain at home.
Harsh on Bahrain, to be honest.
Yeah, because Bahrain at least produces good racing. This looks just meh.
This looks
meh.
Uninspiring.
Yeah. It
just there.
And of course, the new greener, carbon neutral, environmentally friendly F1. Well, they ran their tails wagging to this contract.
Yeah. I think this was like, didn't this come out like immediately after the news that Chase Carey was stepping down and Stefano Domenicali was taking over next year?
Yeah.
So I think this might have been one of the last Chase Carey deals that he greenlighted. I mean, man, we appreciate the mustache, but dude, what the fuck?
dollar bill.
Yeah, like
stand,
we races
stand
one
by
is
the
not,
fucking. You're gonna like, sell yourself on these principles. Fucking stand by him.
Yeah, we races one is not as important as what I like to call shiny hood ornament syndrome, and that's exactly what this is from Formula One, because there was never a good reason to go away from Interlagos. And this is just a complete vanity project by a megalomaniac president who, you know, wants to swing his dick around like a helicopter and have a Grand Prix in his own backyard, which no one asked for, and the only people that want this are people that are going to directly benefit from it. It's like when the Washington football team hired a bunch of dudes to defend themselves from their awful culture. It's awful, and I hate it. Like, stop.
Well, if he swings his dick around enough places, he might get COVID for, what is it, the fifth time?
Sixth? Seventh? Eighth.
Good God.
Yeah, let's talk about next year's schedule.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, one more he gets a free whole chicken at Nando's. But anyway, yeah, there's a lot of, shout out to a friend of the show, Jenny Gao, who put out there as well that it's looking like we're going to get 23 Grand Prix
Jordan!
In F1. Fuck's sake. 23 Grand Prix in 2022.
That isn't the most recent 23 to win a ring.
Yay! Anyway, 23 Grand Prix, and it's looking like we could be getting a Grand Prix in Saudi Arabia.
Yes.
Because if F1 were to, you know, go on a moral high ground trend for the last week or so, why not have a Grand Prix in Saudi Arabia? And I'll get people talking.
I think they're just doing their best tribute to Kobe by taking We Races 1 and its principles, crumpling it up, and shooting it into the trash.
I mean, Dre, haven't you seen any of the trackside advertising this season?
Oh, my.
Maybe.
The big green and blue boards. Did you miss them?
Aramco, yeah. This made me do was think about that concept rendering where this F1 track is apparently going to be part of an amusement park. There's a 92 Ferrari racing against a 97 Stewart at the same time as contemporary cars, and there's a roller coaster that goes to nowhere, which I think is a perfect
this sounds like
for having a
this sounds like Yomnam all
I
over
think the
again.
Roller coaster that goes to nowhere is a perfect metaphor for the 92 Ferrari.
Well, that track isn't happening, by the way.
Oh, so this is different.
It's looking like we're going to get a nice street race in the beautiful resort city of Jeddah, Saudi Arabia.
Woo.
And the crowd goes mild. Oh, boy.
I don't think it's an incorrect take to say that, like, you know, there are racing fans in Saudi Arabia that want nothing to do with the kingdom's bullshit. Who are we to deprive them of racing, considering all the other places that we race in are not necessarily looking so hot? But there
China. Does anyone else remember the 2011 Bahrain Grand Prix?
Neither do I. It didn't happen.
So, yeah. Pretty much where I usually draw the line on these things is if the race promoter is the government itself. That's why I can feel somewhat comfortable with having a United States Grand Prix, because it's not it's not organized by the federal government. It's just a bunch of rich dudes who are like, yeah, let's build this racetrack in Austin.
Yeah, no, because if Donald Trump was in charge of sanctioning the U.S. Grand Prix, he would ask for certainty of the Americas to be torn down so he can rebuild the Meadowlands circuit in his backyard.
Oh, no.
You know how annoyingly believable that actually sounds right now?
That's the part that made me sick. Oh, is that I could see him doing that.
Also, Jesus Christ, we're back to 23 Grand Prix rounds. I mean, I knew this was going to happen, but damn.
This hashtag is over.
Damn, this calendar is
hashtag burnout. Hold the paradise.
Yeah. This is overkill. 23 is ridiculous. We're going to be racing for 9 months of a year. This is...
I mean, they're already testing ways to get around it. Next race at Imola is going to be a 2-day race weekend.
Oh, yeah. We haven't even considered the possibility.
This is not other podcasts advertised in red, okay? I am not going to sit here and endorse 2-day weekends, which have had no proven effect to improve the racing, just because Verstappen won that one time at Silverstone.
No.
Hey, guys!
It's not about entertainment, Dre. It's about logistics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is less load on the teams. Theoretically, you'd go through less components during the year. Theoretically.
Yeah.
And at the same time as well, I know they had talked in the past of grouping more races together, so it's less of a burden
travel
to go
on
across the fucking globe.
Yeah.
But,
less planes and all that.
Yeah.
And, you know, by shortening the race weekend, you get an extra off day during the week.
You do.
Yeah, that's nice. Look, if it's for that reason, I could get behind it. It's the only reason I can get behind it, because I do have a level of empathy from... Look, the drivers, to a degree, of course, will be in the main vocal point of the sport, but there's a lot of people on the ground floor that has to come together to make this happen. Working 100-hour weeks, often are on the road for 3 weeks at a time, especially this year in a climate where there's been a lot of triple headers, two wheels and four. We're in the middle of one right now in MotoGP. We're going to have another one in Formula One next weekend when Portimao rolls around. It's hard. It is hard. It is a lot. And I know stories about people that have had to cancel weddings because of... And this was last year, before we had COVID, about cancelling weddings because races got rearranged and they couldn't guarantee summer breaks off. And it's a lot. And 23 Grand Prix, even purely from an entertainment standpoint, that just sounds like too many to me. It's like, I know that Chase won, like, this big legacy when he first took over the sport before he stood down was that he wanted every race to feel like a Super Bowl. I think he wanted that NASCAR-style calendar of more Grand Prix, more events, everything is bigger, you know, very American.
But Dre, you're somewhat aware of NASCAR. You know every race in NASCAR does not feel like a Super Bowl.
Oh, does it not feel like the Super Bowl? The big difference as well is NASCAR is national. Formula One is international.
Exactly. And when you run
in
a series, that's not crossing borders. It's a lot easier to cram a lot of rounds together, especially when a lot of places and teams are based in one place.
To put it in perspective, NASCAR runs 36 races a year. And it's only going to be... They run for much of the year... Every single week.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All within the contingent United States.
Yep. And look, so yeah, long story short, 23 Grand Prix. No official calendar yet. I spoke to Jenny about it real quick. Apparently, we're about 3 or 4 weeks away from an official 2021 calendar dropping. But people in the know say that it's looking like 23 Grand Prix starting March 14th. Next year with the Australian Grand Prix back in its usual slot.
Those I have to consider as well. That calendar is also going to have to be fluid for reasons I don't think I have to explain.
The Rona, maybe?
Yeah, the Rona.
Who knows?
I think it's going to go on pretty much the same reason why next year's IndyCar calendar is, let me check my notes, 17 races long. Because yeah. I think that there are cancellations baked in.
Oh, yeah. Contingency plans and whatnot. Yeah, of course, and they kind of have to be, really, in that sense. Speaking of IndyCar, before we get out of town here.
Boy, this popped up. And, well, before we get into the big stuff, like, Antonio Felix Acosta tested for Ray Hall Litterman Lanigan Racing. I don't know if that's going to lead to anything, but that's still pretty cool that he got to do that.
Cool. Yep. Very cool. Good to have Bobby and good to have Bobby as a mate and all those BMW meetings and whatnot. It's very cool.
This is not what we're talking about.
No.
Oh no. No. This was a clanger. I think it dropped on Monday night, where out of nowhere, Arrow McLaren Schmidt-Peterson put out a statement saying that if Oliver Askew is fit, he will race in the final race of this season at St. Petersburg next weekend. But that will be his final race for the team. He's gone at the end of the year. And I'm like, wait a minute.
Yep. Hold on.
Like, that was a genuine shock to the IndyCar community. And it looks like the alleged reasoning behind it is something we've got to go back to Indianapolis with the 500. And the incident that Askew had there. And it seems that the concussion story had kind of taken a turn for the worst. Now, I'm trying to piece this together best I can. Help me out here, King. But it seems like Askew's management was trying to hide the fact that Askew may or may not have had symptoms around that sort of time.
Nope. So, basically, Askew hid that he had concussion-like symptoms. It's not specifically clear why he hid them. His agent claims that the team were forcing him the race, and that he was the one who convinced Oliver Askew to seek medical treatment for his symptoms. Obviously, Arrow McLaren, Schmidt-Peterson did not like the fact that this agent went out there claiming that they were forcing Askew to race.
Wow, so for the second year in a row, Arrow McLaren SP has another messy and somewhat unpopular driver sacking.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of ironic that Zoe, who's listening in, brought up this point earlier in the week. I believe they have the same agent as well.
Yes, they do have the same agent. They're managed by the same sports management agency, Spire, who also own a NASCAR team.
Famously own a NASCAR team. Owners of Zombie Furniture Row.
Yes, because they were also involved in a lawsuit in NASCAR because one of the drivers, they managed two drivers in NASCAR, one who's Kyle Larson. Another driver that they had sued them because Spire conspired with Chip Ganassi.
Conspire.
They conspired with Chip Ganassi Racing for this driver to lose his personal sponsorship with DC Solar, and then that sponsorship be transferred to Kyle Larson's 42 at Chip Ganassi.
And that all worked out wonderfully.
Oh, yeah, because DC Stoller, totally upstanding company. Best company. They only work.
Not a Ponzi scheme.
Totally. Look, it's not a Ponzi scheme. It's an upside-down pizza slice scheme. Anyway.
But yes, as you can tell by all these stories that we just went through, Spire, can we trust them? I don't know.
No. I don't know.
No!
Somehow, no. I'm going to go with a no.
And the loser out of this is Oliver Askew, who seems like he is out on his ass. But in the immediate aftermath of him and Spam parting ways, it was just like, well, who's going to get the number 7 car? Is it going to be Sergio Perez? Is it going to be Ryan King? I mean, he's wearing the orange.
Yeah, I'm ready to go. That's why he's wearing the orange. Come on, Zach, call me up. I have my phone right here.
No, like Mr. O'Connell to my right even alluded to the possibility that it might have been Helio Castroneves, maybe for one last farewell tour.
Yeah.
After he got the seat to fill in for the Harvest Grand Prix. But,
none of us were right.
No, it was another
Rosen quick.
King Felix out of nowhere. Hits him with an RKO and says, "I'm taking this seat." And apparently, according to Jenna Fryer on Twitter, Chip did not know this was coming. It seems like Felix had an option for next season on his contract, and Felix is like, "Nope, I'm out of here."
Well, when the first person you have to beat is your teammate, and your teammate is... It's that guy.
Scott Dixon.
That has been a running theme since Dario Franchitti was forced into retirement from injuries. Let's be real here.
Yeah. It's like, do you really want to be teammates to Scott Dixon, like, in the long run? You probably don't.
Jimmy Johnson apparently does.
Well, Jimmy Johnson is also a legendary driver in his own right. I think he wants the smoke.
Yeah, it's like, bring it on, I'll take Dixon on, right? And Felix, understandably, probably had the thought of, I'm never going to win a championship with this team, given Scott Dixon is there, and we all know where Chip's bread is buttered, you know, one of the best IndyCar drivers of all time. As it is, why not go to a good team on the rise, a team that's shown great potential, that has a man who's top five in the championship right now in Pato O'Ward, brackets, he's staying, don't worry, Pato is fine, close brackets.
That's what was so shocking about this, is that this team was blown up last year in the name of the youth movement.
Yeah,
Felix Rosenquist is still young.
Yeah,
he's still young,
ish.
Youngish.
In IndyCar terms, he's young.
In IndyCar terms, you can still run until you're fucking 50 and still be good.
Yeah,
but
Rosenquist is 29 next month.
I didn't even think he was that old.
He's middle of the road for ages at this point. He's 29 on November 7th.
But that's why this was so shocking, is that they, after 1 year where Askew pre-concussion was holding his own and keeping Pato O'Ward, and the hype is real behind Pato, very honest. And this whole situation just, it's really a shame for Askew, and I hope that if he can recover to what he was earlier this season, along with just being able to recover in everyday life, because according to sources, he had really nasty symptoms.
Oh, yeah.
He got his bell well and truly wrong. Hopefully he can find another seat next year, because he's hit the hype behind him was equally justified.
And his talent is real. He is smart beyond his years. He provides the sort of feedback to teams that a guy who's been around for 10 to 15 years would provide. Yeah. So I think he is still a very valuable asset to any team. Hell, Ganassi, Andretti, if you're out there and need another driver.
This now leaves a very coveted seat open, because we have a seat open at Ganassi.
Number 10 car is now available. That's a damn good seat on paper. And who the heck could end up over there? Like, any guesses?
I'm all for Helio Castroneves at Ganassi for the ultimate curse timeline.
Oh, no. We can't. End the show. We can't do this anymore. What's wrong with you?
Imagine telling someone 15 years ago, yeah, Helio Castroneves at Ganassi.
Man.
No!
Everyone on the champ car and IRL side would laugh at you.
Man, King, I've got to say, in all honesty, this is more cursed than the sign we saw a 2-pound block of cheddar cheese being shoved up.
Hey, I'm just going to let everyone know here that I am a PNC Bank member. Chip, you know, I went to school in Pittsburgh.
I hear they need an oval specialist to balance out the races on Jimmy's schedule.
Well, you know what, King? Maybe you should learn how to enter a fucking pit lane.
Whoa.
You heard what I said.
Whoa.
There's only going to be one way to settle this, and that's when Cam builds his own computer and gets his rig set up.
It's something gentlemen. That will never, ever happen.
Gentlemen, gentlemen, put the handbags away, please. God. Can I end the show now before you guys all get into an enormous fist fight? Like, is that okay? Is that doable? Yeah?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Right. Good idea. Okay. All right, and that'll do it for episode 272 of Motorsport 101. Big weekend of motorsport this weekend. Obviously, MotoGP. Like I said, it's a bike special this weekend.
What are you talking about?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it'll already happened by the time this goes up, most likely. But who cares? It's fun anyway to speculate.
No.
We've got MotoGP.
You got MotoGP. We have the Bathurst 1000. We have Petit Le Mans.
All stuff I don't normally watch. All anyway.
No longer featuring the Motorsport 101 crew.
Oh.
We'll be back one of these days.
We never
promise.
Left the burned down IHOP. Tell me about it.
Amazing.
We're going to write a book on the experience. Breaking bread at a burned down IHOP featuring
as
David Land.
As you do. As mentioned, Petit Le Mans as well. The Bathurst 1000 is this weekend. Everybody gets home safe on that one. Big MotoGP weekend at Aragon. We'll talk about it on next week's show, but minus one doctor who actually needed a doctor. More on that on next week's show because the sport's biggest name got the Rona. More on that next week. But all of that, World Superbike season finale in Estoril this weekend. Scott Redding fastest so far in practice. That could be interesting as well. But places you can find us in the meantime are on youtube.com/motorsport101. Subscribe if you haven't already. If you're watching us on there, if you're on listening to us on audio, head over there, youtube.com/motorsport101. Subscribe. facebook.com/motorsport101. Twitter at motorsport_101. Our handles on the screen right now at Harrison101HD, at RJ O'Connell, at Ryan Eric King, at CBuckley917. We're on Instagram at motorsport101pod. Check us out on there as well. We'll promise we'll have some content in the next couple of weeks. We've pretty much got up to speed, so we're going to start phase 3.5 pretty soon, hopefully. We'll beat our heads together in the think tank. So
oh God,
hopefully we're
now the Kingdom Hearts of podcasts.
Oh, we're on patreon.com/motorsport101 if you'd like to fund us on there. $5 gets you access to all our audio shows, 10 for the video versions, and the Supporters Club access where you can listen to these shows live as they're being recorded. Shout out to Jason and Zoe for joining us as always. Thank you very much for listening in. We'll be back next week for a MotoGP/World Superbike special coming from Aragon, and we'll probably mention Bathurst and Petit Le Mans in there as well. But until next time, I've been Andre Harrison. They've been RJ O'Connell. Screw the Braves. That's been Eric King and Cam Buckley. Thank you very much for watching or listening, and we'll talk to you guys next week. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
Bye.
What news story are you going to miss by a day this time?
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of bat suit flu. Ha 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 ha!